The year is 1849. I'm a widowed lady. It's been a few days since I've written in my diary. Over a month since my husband was killed. We were married for 5 years. I'm left alone in his big house with only servants for company. I must walk in the gardens, burn off this excess energy. I wonder, so many secrets, one secret in particular, how will I ever explain to anyone? As I take my walk in the garden, I see you and your father ride up. I admire your strong thighs, your big hands on the reins. I must quell such thoughts. I've met your father before. But you have never met me and expect a grey old woman, not a young, long-necked, neat waist, big cleavage, a real woman like me. My long hair is up neatly. And I can't help my eyes twinkling, lingering on such a handsome young man. I invite you to the house and take your hand in greeting. Your touch makes the heat build up again. But I cannot show it. Instead, I smile and invite you both for a cup of tea. You blurt out you'd prefer a beer. And I look at your father, tries to apologize, but I'm happy to make my maid bring you the beer. I like your cheekiness. And I see you grin. And wink. I don't show I like it. I pretend to be shocked and sit by your father instead, talking to him and ignoring you. For now. You abruptly ask me how my late husband passed. Your father blanches, but I just sip my tea. I glance from the corner of my eye to you and realize you want to see me react by choosing a subject you think will distress me. I've met people like you before, young men who like to stir things up and see what mischief will come of it. Your father informs me you're a lawyer. A hot shot lawyer, I believe is the term. Your young son is not as skilled as subtlety as you are, sir. Maybe his beer is warm. I'll send for some ice. I see your cheeks burn from being ignored and belittled. It makes my heat turn up too. Wondering how much pushing till you lose your temper. My life is very boring since my passionate marriage ended. I long for things to be exciting. Dull, polite conversation holds no interest to me. Your father explains that you are here to help tie up the loose ends from my husband's death. There seem to be questions about his death, and the magistrate will not make a decision. I pause, thinking how I can explain that I had nothing to do with it. But how can I? I don't know all the details myself. My husband was a hero. He fought in the war. He has done many things for this country. There is nothing here in this house that can lead to any more information on the matter. What do you expect to find? You answer that you represent Lloyd's of London, and the irregularities are with the husband's estate. Lucrative pieces of art are missing. Relics from travels my husband did before we were married. You look across at a figurine by the fireplace. Yes, that was from a long time ago, an island. What's that got to do with his death? Other assets, possessions. My husband's study is the only place that will have any record of these things. You're welcome to go through and look. I see, though, sir, that you take my hospitality before revealing your real purpose for wanting to be here. Your father blanches again. Well, if this is to be business, then I am going to retire to my room. I had to leave the room anyway. The build-up, the heat. I need to let out this deep moan I have forming in my chest. I will show you to his study. I have nothing to hide. And I leave the room expecting you will follow. I will not show you the large strong box that I keep under my bed, under lock and key. I cannot show you those secrets. I just hope you'll be satisfied with what you find in the study. You thank me as I rise to my feet, and you take a long moment to stretch. You have been riding and your muscles must be tight. My nostrils fill with a sweet scent. I must go. I can't let you see the reaction I have to any male influence on me. Your father says he will leave and let you study. Experiments, did you say? No, my husband never spoke to me of what he studied. I just run the household like any good wife, Mr. Wallace. If you wish, you can stay here and have supper. It will be served in an hour. I will see your father out, and this maid will show you to your room. I shall change for dinner. You may look through everything here as long as you like. I'm sure if anything is missing, it must be from town. My husband has been gone for months now. I do hope you will be satisfied after you've seen for yourself. I go up to my room, heaving. I'm no sooner in my room than I have to strip off my dress and let my breasts have some room. They have been trapped in a cotton modesty vest, especially reinforced to contain them. They are definitely bigger and have been killing me. The red, angry nipples are leaking a little. I'm not going to be able to keep this secret for much longer. My dress barely covers my ankles, and I've let them hem down. The only other option is to get my maid to sew a fringe of lace on them, a ruffle around the whole hem. I've grown another inch just today. If they knew, if anyone knew, that I was originally only 4'11". Now I'm almost 5'7", and I have no idea how to stop this. My husband's tonic to help me fight the seasonal colds. He said it would protect me from the influenza. So many die from it each winter. He said he loved me so. He swore he couldn't risk losing me. And each time he made love to me, I felt myself stronger. I miss him. I must try to read a little more of his notebook, but with you in the house, I sigh in exasperation. Find something I can wear for dinner. There is only my black satin long gown. Too formal, really, but its gathered bust will hide my breasts. And the ruffled fabric disguise their size. And in the candlelight there will be less chance of you seeing my bare ankles. In the study, you search through documents. Leather-bound volumes. Each with copious amounts of notes. Mammals from various countries. Species strange research into estrous cycles, fertility rates. You close the volume and head to the dining room. You see me and ask impertinently, "Are we still in mourning?" I always wear a formal gown for dinner with my guests. I wouldn't dream of entertaining you and the office you hold without the proper respect. Under my breath, I add, "Cheeky," mentioning something so delicate. You seem determined to make me react. I can control my feelings of annoyance and anger, but what I'm finding more difficult to control is the feel of your hand as you come over to take mine. I'm sure I can detect your heartbeat through my fingers. I'm acutely aware of you and my aching breasts throb once more. I feel my heat below me, so I quicken my pace to the dining table as you walk me there. It's no good, you must see my breath speeding up, so I pretend to be tearful. "Yes, my poor dear husband, I do miss him so." It is the truth. I miss him near me. I miss him in the way all women miss their husbands. As I breathe in, I can smell something. That delicious smell again. And I forget myself. You pull out my chair so I may sit, and lay your hand quite impertinently on my shoulder, "Sir." But I feel a terrible surge in me and my breasts grow. Before I can grasp my pocket handkerchief and hold it to my neck, my cleavage and décolleté are more visible as you stand behind me. It's your scent. My heart beating faster. The heat under me again, reminding me that I'm a woman. However, the throb is almost painful as I squeeze my thighs together. You pause, but I dare not turn. You will see my blush, the flush of the reaction. My sense is so acute from being close to a man. Young, youthful fertility inside you. I can almost hear the wriggle of the balls in their sack. You pat my hand to comfort me. You seem taken in by my ruse, and I notice that you shift and squirm. You must feel guilty for making me distressed. But you notice I too cannot sit still. You're hungry for the meal, and as it is served before us, you try to reassure me again, telling me it will be okay, and that you will keep the trouble to a minimum. I see that you watch me. You wonder what's different about me. But I sip my wine and try not to look at you. you toast me and thank me for this dinner. You tuck in your napkin into your collar. I sigh at how little you know of manners. The relief of you letting go of my shoulder and sitting down. Blasts of cravings running through my lines. My mind fills with images of me climbing over the table and knocking over the crystal and cutlery to rip off your clothes and devour you. I close my eyes and breathe air through my nose. Slowly. Deliberately. To try to calm myself and my thoughts. I lift my glass and look at you. I've pictured you stark naked. Your cock between your legs. Large, red, tipped erection. I look down at my glass of red wine and it swirls before me like two bodies, naked bodies turning in the liquid, long, swirling limbs reaching for each other, reaching out around and around, and I bite my lip hard. Ooh, it hurts, but brings me back to the reality, and I drain my glass as you toast to my good health. Thank you. You look shocked by the way I drank the wine, and my servant refills the glass. The first course of the meal is placed before us, and how I manage to eat it with any grace is beyond my reckoning. I ask simple questions like where you were educated to allow you to speak. The sound of a male voice, the vibrations, the chords, the way your Adam's apple moves is all maddening to me. Finally, we finish the meal and I pretend that I'm very tired. We walk to the drawing room and I realise my ankles are more visible here, where the room is lit by the fire as well as a large candelabra. I see you glance at them. It's most unseemly that they should show. Black stockings feel like they're falling down. But my legs are longer, my shoes don't fit, and I let them slip off. Oh dear, how my feet do ache. I've been on them all day. Please forgive my informality. I'm so very tired. All this upsets me more than you know. I must retire to bed now, Mr. Wallace, and I do hope you... My words fail me for a second as I imagine you in your bed. I hope that you will be comfortable this evening. This time, you notice my blush, and I try to look down and feel the seams on my dress creaking under the strain. My whole pelvis is screaming at me too. I cannot give in to such thoughts, such impropriety. And if you see what is happening to me, I will be cast into an asylum and committed for such sinful, insane thoughts. I'll be locked up. Please excuse me. I rush from the room, up the stairs, to my own room. I wash my face with cold water and look at myself in the full-length mirror. I pull off the sleeves and then unbutton the fastenings down my side. The fabric peels away from my moistened breasts. The nipples are flattened but immediately pop out when uncovered, and then a bloom of milk forms on each one. I try to hold my breasts to massage them, to stop the aching soreness, but they are heavy. As I press my palms to them, the milk dribbles down their oval shape and runs in a small stream to my waist. I push down the skirts and stand in my bodice and long knickerbockers. They too are so damp from my quim's juices. I strip and wash myself and manage to undo the stays of my whalebone corset. I stand and watch the way my chest with my gigantic boobs swells. The hair between my legs is a bush now, though I need to stand legs apart to ease the swelling lips there, and I ache so much. I place my hand there to feel. My clit is like a grape, so tense, so very sensitive. As I look in the mirror, I see it's covered in the clear, glistening flow which runs down my legs. I have no choice but to sit on the four-poster bed and run my hands along the slit, trying to ease the terrible hunger I feel. I lay back, my legs still wide. My feet easily touch the floor now, even this large oak four-poster. My feet used to barely dangle from the edge. I use my fingers to feel inside. I gasp at how wet and soaked I am. I need something inside me. I need to be filled. I'm so tight. One or two fingers will fit, but it's also swollen. I cannot force them in. I need something hard. For now, I rub the great pearl of a clit, circling, running my fingertips over it, laying, moaning on my bed. I can't stop. I'm no longer in control of this. I rub faster and faster and harder. Both my hands on my pussy, one hand opening my lips, and the other fingers rubbing there, rubbing. I need to feel the quickening, the heartbeat in me. Suddenly, the images of my husband making love fill my mind. I moan louder and groan with the ache. I need to extinguish it. Oh, fuck. As I pleasure myself, I forget that I'm so noisy, and all I suddenly need is to be fucked. I look around the room, looking for something to use, and I see the walking cane with the silver-topped handle. I sit up and quickly walk to pick it up from where it leans on the wall. I take it up in my hand, gripping it tightly. I immediately plunge the thick head into my body, into that place once filled by my husband in marriage. I now fornicate. I have no choice. I don't care as I stand. I have trouble pushing it in. So I let the stick touch the floor and lower my body till I force it between me, between the floor and my open legs. I take it inside and immediately begin to feel the cum. Knees bent, legs wide, I watch myself in the mirror and my huge tits bounce as I am impaled on the silver top of the mahogany cane. I come with such force I have to hold my hands to grip each post of the bed. I grunt and groan, suddenly tighten so hard. I lift and expel the walking stick from my body, along with so much pushy juice. Primitive, primeval growls come from me like an animal from the wild, and I stand, gripping the posts. My body is racked with the superb pleasure. I sit down for a few moments. A need in me. Temporarily slaked. I look around for a towel and mop up my body, glistening with sweat, milk, and the cum down my legs. I see my nightgown. It still fits me, though it only reaches to below, above my knees. I must go to read the notebook. I must find out if there's a relief, a cure, a way of stopping this terrible fate. My brain will fog again soon. To just a needful thing. I don't have long. I wear the cream calico fabric. My breasts ache as they bob from me pulling it over. I bend to find the strong box under my bed. It feels lighter, but maybe I'm stronger. And there is the clasp. But what did I do with the key? I simply pull on the lock to see if it's open, but the metal breaks under my hand as if it were brittle. I open the chest and take out the journal and the notebook. But that's when I realise the grunting I made. My animal cry and the dragging chest have brought you into my room.